meeting? He was not here, so you might vote. Why don't we have a quorum. The chair sees a quorum. Representative Norton is going to move the minute. You see the minute? Looks good.
Okay.
All in favor of the minute, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes adopted. I move Senate file number 26 off the table. This is the delete all. You guys seen this? This is the delete all. All the non-controversial stuff that we worked on is in here. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Amendment. The delete all has been adopted to Senate File 26. Okay. It is now before us. Let me see. Here's the chair also moves the A1 onto the DE1. The A1 is Representative O'Tremba's the X-ray operator. I believe Representative Fritz that this is the agreement.
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor of the agreement? A1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, A1 is adopted. Representative Abler has originally three, but we have...
Oh, we're doing the social work.
Turn it down to just two.
Right.
Which one do you want to start?
Let's do the social work one first. That's the F0026A2 amendment. That's the long one.
Which one?
It's the F0026A2 amendment. That's the big thick one.
Hold on. The big one?
Yeah, the big one.
Holy. Isn't that what you said?
Oh. Is that the right one?
Okay. Did you bring the two?
Oh, that's a different group. This is the counselors we're talking about. This is the social workers. I'm here to confuse you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Did you find that amendment, though?
Social work.
Wait, we did two things for them last time, and we're doing one more thing for them today. Remember we talked about that?
Right. I remember it was significantly smaller.
Mr. Chair, let me explain.
Okay, why don't we
this
go
is
to
a
that?
Policy. This is not just a policy committee, it's a subcommittee of a policy committee. The people who really belong in these kinds of subcommittees are people who truly love to work on policy. A policy wants good days when they get to recodify a section of the law and make it cleaner and more organized for the people to read and use more, it is better. A policy wants dreams to recodify that same section of law 2 years later after they did its first time. And what you see here is this. And the man who can tell you why they did that is sitting to my right. Actually, there's way less new stuff than it looks like. It's just all reorganized because they did some modest changes. There was a working group. And
that's a copy of my
What I'm going to get for you members, which I'm sure you'll want to take home and put by your bed, is a copy of the report from a task force that we set up last time who actually worked and did their job and came back with a report about all these multiple, there's mid-level licensure counselor kind of groups. Anyway, out of the fruit of that work was that the social workers needed to do some work on their license to make them good into the future. And so what this is doing is raising part of their licensure criteria. And so it takes all this to do it. It would take about 2 pages to do that, but they made it all organized. So that's the heart of the bill. And with that, I'll turn it to my testifier who will give you the 2-minute version of why that's so important.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Merriman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work, and I'm here to support the legislation that Representative Abler just described. This legislation was an outgrowth of a task force that was established by the Department of Human Services pursuant to a legislative mandate to look at standards for clinical practice across all mental health professions. And the idea was to establish minimum standards that would apply to professional counselors, to social workers, to psychologists, and other mental health professionals who provide clinical services. So this bill is based on the recommendations that were in that task force. And the social work recommendations were supported after a lengthy discussion, not only by members of the task force representing all of the mental health professions, but also by members of the Board of Social Work, by clinical educators, by practicing clinicians and others. So as far as we know, we have broad consensus on the recommendations. As Representative Abler indicated, the actual changes in the bill are much more modest than you would think by looking at the size of the bill, and I apologize for that. But this was actually a recommendation made by the reviser when we took our proposal to the reviser's office. A feature of the bill that you need to be aware of is that the bill does not take effect for 4 years. And that was requested by the people who were looking at the recommendations and developed the recommendations in order to give people sufficient lead time to make some changes that would be required in order to meet the standards that are in the bill. And because the effective date is 4 years out, the reviser had to deal with the question of, well, what if there are changes in the meantime and da da da. So the decision that was made by the reviser with our agreement was to simply recodify the entire act, and that's why it's so long. But the substantive changes in the bill have to do with establishing minimum requirements for individuals who would be licensed as licensed independent clinical social workers. And the minimum requirements, as I mentioned, would be the same for, largely the same for social workers as well as other practicing professionals. The bill, as I mentioned, is supported, does have broad support in the social work community. And with Representative Abler's permission, I would like to ask an association representative to speak as well to the bill, if that would be okay.
I think I want to hear that they like it. Right?
Representative Abler, let me see.
What do you want to hear? Everybody's happy.
You have some amendment, don't you?
No, this is a different, this is not what we talked about in my office. So this is the social work bill, that's the clinical, that's the different bill.
I am going to take a recess for 5 minutes. We'll take a recess for my 5 minutes. And we'll reconvene in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Well, I learned from you yesterday.
Yeah, it seems to be a popular thing. motors.
You even sent the advisors, the nonpartisan advisors, working in the spirit of the repealers. So,
wait, did we hear that?
Okay, we're reconvened.
Mr. Chair, if you would like, the association and the different groups could say that they're comfortable with the bill.
Sure. Why don't we go with the testimony and then Representative Flint that will take questions after the testimony.
And they're looking for briefs.
I'll be brief. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Pam Lunenberg, and I'm the coordinator for the Minnesota Coalition of Licensed Social Workers. And I'm just here to say very briefly that our coalition represents seven different social work associations, from school social workers to clinical to the National Association. Basically, we really support these changes, and the reason we do is so much has been added to the field of mental health. We know so much more now about how the brain functions, how families work together, how we can help people, and we wanted to make sure that the standards in our licensing bill would really equip social workers in schools and in their supervision to do a really good job with their clients. And that's just the bottom line of why we work together. We had educators, we had clinicians, we had social workers, we had everybody at the table. And it took us 13 meetings, but we figured out what standards we wanted, and that's what you have in front of you today.
Mr. Chair, the reports you have actually... there's some extras here if anybody in the audience wants one, and they would all probably want one, but we could always make more. But that describes the conclusions of this task force, which was they spent the whole summer doing.
I think before we move forward, I think for fairness, I know that I have a conversation with Representative Abler already, but I think fairness to the members on this committee, I think we're just going to lay this over and then we'll come back and look at it a little bit more. Unless there are discussions on that, if not, I will rule for that. Okay. The chair lays this bill over. Bring it back. Later date. So, sorry.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just so you understand the reason, even though it has a delayed implementation date, whenever it starts, it will have a delayed implementation date. So, if you wait a year, it'll be a year beyond. And so, I'm not all sure what's on your mind, but I'm just pointing out that. The delay date does not mean it doesn't need to be done for 4 years, but to give due notice to the people who are going to be starting the programs, they don't want to be surprised.
I don't think it has nothing to do with the bill. I think it's just, it is a significant bill, and I just want members on the committee to also get a chance to review it first as well. So that's really why I laid this over. So, thank you for coming. I'm sorry.
Chairman, may I just make a comment?
Yeah,
well, I appreciate that, and I just wanted to Representative Abler and the rest of you. You know, my youngest daughter, Lisa, is a social worker in the hospice program in St. Cloud, and I would, you know, this must have taken a lot of time, 13 meetings, and I know how hard you all work, and I would like for my own sake to be able to look at it and read it and know more about it and share that with my daughter and have her share her and run it by her as well. So, I mean, that's, I think, for most of us, it's the first time I've seen it. So,
yeah.
Having said that,
the chair.
Take a look at it.
Mr. Chair.
It represents Abler.
I'm not debating what you've done. My witness just would like to offer a thought.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Chair Tao and Representative Fritz. My daughter also is in social work training right now, and I'm a social worker. Would it be helpful if we would meet with you or other members of the committee and be able to go through the bill and explain what the different parts would be?
Very good.
I would like that.
Yes, I would like that too. I think I kind of fault myself for giving this such a fast track for this bill. I would like to give a full hearing for you on this bill, and that's why I laid over. It's going to be brought up this year. We still have time now until Chair Thiessen's committee. If we work it out, we could still put it in there at that time as well. Mm-hmm. But you will get your opportunity.
And Mr. Chair, I will. The folks will start making appointments to go meet the members of the committee.
Representing Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to those of you that came for this bill, thank you for the work that you did. And this is not a dig on the bill at all. I just want to point out for the record and support Chairman Powell that there's 67 pages to this bill with a boatload of repealers, and it was printed at 2:37 this afternoon. So and at no fault of anybody, it would have been impossible for me to read this and understand this. So I appreciate you, Mr. Chair, stating that we're going to give this a hearing and get the information in this bill out, because I also appreciate the work that was put into to craft this bill that I don't even know exactly what exists in it. So.
So, is Representative Walker in the room?
No.
Thank you. Give me the other bill.
Representative Abler has. Did you bring the amendments, Representative Abler?
Yes, they're here. And so maybe the staff could pass these.
Why don't we start out with the fee one?
Yeah. Okay. You're done. Okay. And Mr. Chair, to the lateness of this big amendment, which is actually introduced as a bill, it was made as an amendment just for ease of handling tonight. The bill is, I don't know what number it is, but it's been introduced within the last week, I believe. So it's on there. It is a bill drifting around. And when you do a recodification, you repeal all the previous stuff. So every bit of the language would have been repealed. So you have all the repealers. Simply repealing.
Well, Representative Abler, why don't we move the bill?
So,
the DE bill.
And so, Mr. I would move this would be the staff can craft this as an amendment to your to the base bill. I would, as an amendment to Senate File 26, I would move the 07334 draft.
To the delete all.
To the delete all.
Okay, go ahead and explain the bill.
And if, and this is on behalf of another board in a very similar way. And thank you, Mr. Chair. The more you get close to these boards, the more there's a lot of overlap and common function, which creates some of the challenges that actually members of a committee like this face. The boards set their fees, and they're required to recover their costs in their fees. And so we don't need that one. That's the one I'm not going to use. And so we're working off this single page, a little smaller one you might find to be more comfortable. These are the fees, and it would be my intention when the omnibus comes up, they could be put under this delete all just to get a proper movement out of here, but then they would be carried in the finance bill, would be my expectation, because they're money, and they go into the state special revenue fund. So if you have any questions about the fees, the board can tell you why they picked a fee and which ones are not. But we put these in statute customarily, and we do it like this.
So essentially, Representative Abler, these fees, the board essentially were part of this, and they asked for these fees to be readjusted to this level, right?
That's right, and this is the... Now, maybe just meet the witnesses.
Why don't we go with the testifier?
Sure. Go to the fees.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carrie Rexigal. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. And also with me is Nick Reese, the current board chair. And just briefly, the fees were discussed in our board's legislative committee, and all those were open meetings. We also met with the Department of Finance, and these were seen as reasonable new fees and fee increases, and they are part of the governor's budget. And that's essentially it.
Are there any questions about any particular fees? The boards are supposed to break even, or if they have a deficit, they have to recover them over 5 years. So we'll stand for questions.
Chair Ben, members, testifiers, and maybe you've said this in the confusion here, I missed it. The language on the fees amendment, is it, I noticed we're making some language change in a Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy, I believe we're going to hear next. So is the language in this, if this didn't get approved, is the language in this appropriate as is, or is it only going to be appropriate after we approve this? Because I notice you have the term professional clinical counseling.
Tell me what's coming next, because I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, these are drafted as three bills. There's another bill we're not hearing tonight because it involves a great deal of controversy. And so we're picking the two that have no controversy. They are standalone. And so this can pass on its own with no trouble.
So, I'm taking you at your word, Chair Ben, I'm sorry. I'm taking you at your word that this is non-controversial. I plan on asking some questions about it just so I understand what I'm voting on, seeing as how I just got it. But I just wanted to make sure that we're not putting the cart before the horse in approving language for fees on a position that isn't in law yet. Is all. I was just questioning them.
Madam Chair, these are fees based upon their expenses. Whatever happens, these fees are necessary to break. So it's immaterial,
sure,
whatever happens.
Yeah. Okay, it's not the fee I'm questioning, it's the title. Do we have in law currently a professional clinical counseling, or is that to be added in a moment? And if so, I'm questioning the order that we're approving these amendments, is my question, is what I'm questioning.
That's actually a good question. I understand now.
Which line are you referring to?
Chair Ben, on the amendment that we had before us, line 5.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe I should just remove that line, because we're not actually taking up that part tonight. That's part of the controversy. And so I suggest maybe to your point, if I could orally amend it and delete, like 114 and 115, I think, is the line that would reflect that. So that should be deleted in the renumbered. Is that right?
One moment.
And also line 16. All these three. LPCC.
Can you repeat that, Representative Abra?
Actually, we're working on it, Mr. Chair. Just making sure that.
And Chair Chad, I'll just update you on what I've done while they're looking. I had just been questioning on line 1.14 and 1.15 whether we were approving something in an amendment that, in fact, we haven't yet put into law, and, in fact, that is the case. And so they're going to remove it because it's not.
Mr. Chair, so the amendment would be, if I can, to strike lines 114 through 118, and that would just clean it up. It would be moot, actually, because they would be unable to assess a fee for a position that didn't exist, so it would just be cluttering up the law.
All those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment adopted. I know that this was not drafted as an amendment, and it was taken out from another amendment, and so staff will eventually draft some language to get the reviser to just redraft this.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, the staff, this is actually the draft of the bill, and it's been introduced, so thank you. So that's the, any questions on the fees, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Aves, are you ready for that, with that language?
Mr. Chair, it's going to take me a little bit longer than I thought.
Why don't we hold this over?
or as you're discussing it and deciding what to include, right. I can make my notes and I can let you know at the end of the meeting what I need to do.
We'll just hold this over until the staff.
That's fine.
Ms. Representative Bunny, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler or whoever. Line 1.9, it says initial license application fee for licensed professional counseling, and you're dropping the fee from $250 to $150. And then line 1.11, it says initial license fee for LPC is $250. Help me understand that. Maybe it's more obvious to me than, or more obvious than it seems to be.
Okay. The previous arrangement was for somebody to apply for licensure and pay one fee, and that was their application fee and their initial license fee. This has been split now into two fees, and so we were unable, we don't have the resources to examine somebody's qualifications until they apply, and sometimes they don't meet the qualifications, and then they spend the entire fee. So this would be a way for us to do that. And also it's a common arrangement in the licensing business to have an application fee, and then once you meet the requirements, then to have to pay for your first term of licensure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So thank you. And the way I read it then, it's going to be an additional $150 to get licensed. All right. Throughout the bill, you know, it's crossing out $200 and putting $250 in. So, I mean, this is fee increases. Tell me again why we have to increase these fees. Just simply put.
Okay. Minnesota Statutes Chapter 214.055 requires health licensing boards to establish fees to recover their expenditures in a five-year period. This board was created in 2003 and has incurred quite a few startup costs, rulemaking, and it's significantly in debt, $600,000. And this will not address the entire deficit. We currently only have one full-time staff member devoted to this program. And so that's the tough spot we're in.
Mr. Chair, so you're saying $600,000 in debt right now. Raising the fees here will not get you out of debt, but it will get you closer to the zero. Who do you turn in? Who's watching this? I mean, how do you get $600,000 in debt?
Actually, we licensed two programs, and the alcohol and drug counseling program that came to us from health. We inherited a significant debt there, too.
What happened was?
$300,000.
Almost a million.
Oh.
And there is a plan in place to recover that. It's a $99 surcharge on each application and renewal. The reason, in large part, is the overestimation of how many licensees we would have. In the original estimates were somewhere around 2,500 to 3,000. We currently have 423 professional counselors. They've had a real tough go. Lots of opposition being recognized in the workplace and by insurance companies. And so we have to regulate the profession. We have to promulgate rules, and that's...
Last question. So you said 423?
Mm-hmm.
Your industry is ready to accept this fee increase, which ultimately I assume would be probably recaptured by passing it along to the end consumer. But your industry is welcoming this with open arms? And
the Minnesota Counseling Association had no issues with the necessity to do this.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Abler, and to the testifiers. I'm just wondering, when I hear a little bit about the difficulty that you've had in the estimation of license holders and the number that are holding licenses, if you've talked about or considered the increased fees and the impact on the profession and the possible entrance into the profession, and if that's going to create another negative impact on the number of people coming in.
I think that, you know, nothing is absolute, or Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, while nothing is really predictable, obviously, so I'm not going to tell you anything more than my take on this. There was some other legislation and changes in the Board of Psychology that kept about a year and a half window where master's level people who are licensed under that board had an option to convert to a full licensed psychologist. That would be the same group of potential applicants that we would have. That window closed in December, so we assume that then all of those master's level people that would apply there would come to one of the other boards, of which we are one.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked the question only because I have a little bit of a concern that you have a debt, and we're increasing fees to try and attain that debt, but you're already working with a number smaller than you'd hope for. So I just, you know, want to know your thinking about the potential growth of the debt versus the, you know, the remedy. And what might happen if the debt grows rather than the license holders grow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, there's a one of the bills, and not just this is also a trifecta of bills. We'll be bringing forward two tonight. The third one that we're not bringing forward tonight, which was brought forward last year in an effort to get medical assistance coverage for these folks, was controversial at the time because they were curious. The different groups were curious as to whether there was enough credential in the group to warrant medical assistance coverage. Hence, the task force has a report in front of you. And so the bill we're not taking up tonight creates in there a little higher level of license for one who just struck, which would then be eligible for MA if the body decides to do it and if they find the money in MA to pay for them. When that happens, it'll be it's a vicious cycle. So then when they have MA coverage, they can actually work in places that take MA, and people will help to be paid for, they'll want to be it, and they will draw more people in. So that's not being taken up tonight. In this committee, and so that's been the effort. And so this group, as a startup board, has had quite a challenge compared to a nursing board, which is in existence for millennia, probably. this group is 2003, and taking on the alcohol drug counselors, which had a huge debt. They've actually reduced the debt, if you notice, and they're on the way to getting out. And so that's why I'm interested in advancing. This is necessary. This is a statutory obligation, as you understand. They must cover their debt. The impact of that, if they lose licensees, you hope they don't, and hopefully as the window closes that perhaps they can get more. If the MA matter can be resolved, more can come. But this mid-level licensure for counselors was something a very important niche to fill, and that's what they're attempting to do. Hope that helps.
Representative Norton.
Chair Tao, Representative Abler, and distinguished guests. I don't want to make this difficult, but I do have a question here. Is the 26A3 the one we're going to be taking up? Or is that the one we're not going to be taking up?
I'm
going to
take that. That's the one I'm not taking.
Thank
That's
you.
Been laid on the table.
But along with... It hasn't been offered yet. Okay.
It hasn't been offered.
Then let me go back to the question that I had initially. I just wanted to make sure. This is a licensing committee, and having heard the testimony about the difficulties, I will support this, but I frankly, this is not going to get you out of debt. $10 here, $25 there is simply not going to do it. So I do have concerns that were shared by some of my colleagues about what are you going to do, and to me that raises a larger question of, as licensing committees, what should, and I want to learn from your mistakes, if you'll allow me for a moment, what is it that happened in your, I think, long... awaited request for this particular proposal that came through a couple years ago. What has happened? What can we learn about? Because we're approached by every group for licensure. Is there something, are there questions we should ask? Can you share something about your experience that might help us in the future?
Thank you. Well, I'll be a wild card here, and I'll tell you just common sense. If funds could be made available from either the general fund or the special revenue fund surplus to help create the board so they can start out at zero, that would be the ideal. That would be the ideal. And everybody laughs at me when I say that. But practically speaking, that would be the ideal scenario. We are fee-based, and, you know, you start out at zero, and you have to open the office and buy the equipment. And, you know, so I don't know what I can offer except that we've tried to keep the expenses as low as we could.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I was one of the people that's been working on counselor licensure for a long time. I'm a counselor educator at Winona State. And when we estimated the 3,000, you know, the 2,500 to 3,000 people, we based that on the number of people that were graduating through the state university systems and the counselor education programs, which includes St. Cloud State, Mankato State, Moorhead State, now Bemidji State, and Winona State. And there's a master's program at the University of Minnesota. And when the counselor bill passed, what became evident was that reaching Minnesota mental health provider status was important, you know, which is the bill that we're not considering right now. And then the grandparenting, for lack of a better word, of the master's level psych people in there also set that back. I think our original numbers of how many people had actually been graduated that would qualify for this was probably a little high, but not in exaggeration that has come out to this time. So it's been kind of a mini domino effect for two or three years that I think has made this. You know, that we went through the administrative services and our estimates and all that when we started the licensure. I don't know if that helps you at all. But
it does, Chair Town. If I could just follow up, and I don't want to belabor this, but I do really appreciate that feedback. I think we need to keep those things in mind, and I guess as a new person serving on this committee, I would not have assumed that every new licensure would mean an office and you know, I don't know who I thought was taking care of it, but I didn't have in my head maybe the depth and breadth of what a new licensure program might mean. And so I really do appreciate your honesty and wish you luck in getting out of debt. It looks like an insurmountable task, but thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will be quick. Representative Norton pointed this, and I think it's been talked about. You're statutorily obligated to cover your debt. This bill will not do that. What's the plan? And what does the statutory obligation mean if we're not going by it?
I can attempt to answer that. What happened with the alcohol and drug counselors was a similar scenario. Again, estimates for that license were, you know, didn't turn out as projected. And so it would be legislation would be enacted to extend that period of time beyond the five-year period in another law, saying this licensing program shall collect this surcharge until, and for them it's 2013 to recover that debt. Now they have numbers. There's approximately 1,620 alcohol and drug counselors currently, and they expect to have twice that number.
I assume this is a start, and we're probably going to need to do more work with your group in this committee. So,
and Mr. Chair, they worked with finance on this, and I think that given the concerns of both Senator Murphy and others, you don't want to recapture it all in the normal 5 years would just crush these folks. So I think this is a reasonable plan, and finances are working with them, so maybe we can support this.
Members, I believe you do have to vote this to the delete all. Okay. And so Representative Abler moves for passage of this amendment. I believe Ms. Hayes has some language before we do that.
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment will go, we will have an oral amendment to delete lines 1.14 through 1.18. And the revisor instruction will say on page 21 after line 19, insert, and it will be all of the language contained in 07-3334.
With the amendment to strike line 1-4 as well. So everyone understand that. Even if we didn't, the staff understand it. So I will offer that amendment unto the oral amendment unto Representative Abler's amendment. All those in favor of that oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, amendment adopted. Then this is Representative Abler's amendment into the delete all. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The amendment adopted. Okay.
Do you want the second part now or take Representative Walker first?
Why don't we take Representative Walker? We won't go into the big bill yet, Representative Walker. We'll take the complaint amendment. Originally, it was drafted as a bill, and I asked Representative Walker to make this as an amendment into the delete all. So I will move the S0026A4 amendment onto the delete all amendment. So, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the bill that actually came to me after having a conversation last fall with Representative Ryland. It's the issue that I've been struggling over for the last 5 months and trying to figure out the right language. And as counsel will tell you, have had many versions of what type of language to be moving forward on this, and finally came up with some language after talking to some individuals in the AG's office. What happened to Representative Ryland, while it seems like a unique case, it's one of the things that here, us as representatives, we find ourselves in a peculiar place. We often are able to get phone calls back when our constituents can't get phone calls back for the same issue. We may be able to get an appointment where our constituents may can't get an appointment. And we don't want just to have the rights of passage to certain opportunities. We want to make sure that there's equity for our constituents out there. Representative Greiling's son had an opportunity. Actually, he has a diagnosis of schizophrenia. And she is okay with anyone knowing about this, and please, she can talk to her about this tomorrow. And he went to see a doctor who actually has a chiropractic license. Not to pick on the chiropractic board, this is just one particular incident. And for her son started seeing this doctor, and for whatever reason, he actually stopped taking his medicines and went into crisis. And so Representative Growling and I were talking about the process that she had to go through and making a complaint. And there was misinformation that she had originally, and that's why the language of the original House File 218 is in the way that it is. We thought that parents and other relatives could not make a complaint. After talking to a couple of the boards, finding out you can make a complaint, but the process still is not clear. So the amendment that's in front of you now basically says if one of the boards, if you have a complaint, whether it's the nurses or whomever, it's a licensure board, and it is a subcommittee that makes the determination if your complaint is valid or not. If you have been denied your complaint by a subcommittee, when they send you the letter in writing saying, for whatever reason you were denied, that you are informed that you have an opportunity to appeal to the full board. And that's pretty much all that the amendment says. There isn't a true appeal process that people can take, but it is one step further in making sure that other individuals hear your complaint.
All right. Are there any questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Amendment adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll move over here.
Representative Abler has one small amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 2105 be amended into Senate File 26. It's the little one. The little tiny one on small paper. It's so small, we didn't use legal paper, Madam, Mr. Chair. That's how small it is. It's in 26.8. That's all little it is. We wanted to.
Go ahead, Representative Abram.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Having heard your concern for the future of this board and the chances to attract more people to come to accept administrations and licensure and oversight, it would make all the sense in the world to make it easier for people who are trained in a foreign country to come and be licensed. That's a pretty good segue that worked out. Anyway, so this is customarily done. In fact, at this last meeting we had, we talked about the social workers doing a similar thing about how do you bring them in. And so the process that goes about is a board would ask people who care to offer advice about how shall we do this and what kind of credential. One of the challenges is what do you do with a foreign school credentials and so on. And this is their answer. So with that, the executive director and her can testify about this. And just for comfort level, the social work people who have been here are comfortable. I asked them to look at this, and they were aware of it and thought it was a good idea, and also the social worker union thought it was fine. So there's some. And just, you know, when you get this kind of complexity with these closely held groups, the more that the groups who are similar to you agree that you're doing the right thing, the more you know you're on the right track. So I hate those as well to be high praise. So with that, I'll submit to my witness.
State your name and who you represent for the record.
Carrie Rexigal, Executive Director of Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy.
Nick Rees, Chair of the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy.
Go ahead, Mrs. Rexigal.
This language was drafted by the board's legal counsel and very quickly approved by our legislative committee. I would make mention of one thing that I noticed in subdivision 2. There is a reference to the clinical counselor licensure. That
can you, Ms. Rufsico, what page are we looking at? H. 3.1? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Actually, that in this draft in front of me, it says page 4. Maybe the line number is easier.
Subdivision 2 starts with supervision.
Actually, it's after that. That whole first part is on the clinical counselor license that we're not talking about.
Chair, could we please clarify that we're only talking about page 4, section 2? Is that, am I, okay, thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. The original plan was to do all three bills, and that's why we didn't get the scrutiny. And actually, today we'll be reading the bills. And so the section we're actually talking about is really on lines 5.3, right, to line 5.21. And it would be actually with the exception of the sentence on lines 514 to 516, because that cross-references the other part. So, and all of the testimony, then I would make an amendment to make it clean.
Very good. Go ahead, Ms. Gripsicle.
Yes, thank you. We have had one applicant from a foreign country. She was trained in South America, and so this would have been very beneficial for us to have in our law. When she applied for licensure.
Okay. Mr. Reese, do you have any comments? Representative Abler, are you ready for your amendment?
I'll let the staff repeat it. We're telepathic, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Ayes and I are wired here, so I think she knows what I would say.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 21, after line 19, we're going to insert section 2. There will be an oral amendment to that on line 5.14. Delete everything after the period. Delete line 5.15. And on line 5.16, delete subdivision 1, clause 3.
And so, Mr. Chair, that's the. It's gotten smaller all the time. Now you're down to like a half a bit. I told you it was short.
Let's adopt that amendment.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, oral amendment adopted.
I just like to ask one question, and this is only because we have some language, or at least some concerns raised by a dental group that put similar language in and now is asking perhaps to have that removed. Do you have a process for evaluation, or is that going to be done internally? And I would just suggest if that isn't part of your plan that you do so, because sometimes these things get put in and they don't work as well as you might think, and I would just suggest you keep an eye on it.
So how do you evaluate your funds?
Ultimately, the board's application and licensure committee examines all applications for licensure, and they would make the final decision as to whether that degree was equivalent and met our licensure standards. So this language just provides a mechanism to get things translated and get them into a form. This would be all at the applicant's expense. It just provides instructions for how to do that, and they still have to qualify. Does that help?
Representative Norton.
Thank you. The issue has come after the fact several years. The law has been put into place, and now there are concerns by some in the dental profession that perhaps it wasn't a good idea to do this, and that was the piece. I was just making a suggestion. I'm not suggesting to amend the language, but for your thought processes, to have some sort of evaluation in place to make sure it is working down the line.
Mm-hmm. Representative Norton.
Chairman Thau and testifiers, I've been exposed to the same issue that's faced with the dental in the dental profession, and they discovered a couple different things. One is that doing this process became incredibly burdensome. The number of applicants they had, the amount of both paper testing and also clinical testing they had to perform, the amount of retesting that occurred with these individuals, and then the amount of complaints they had, in some cases, about individuals was higher than their other licensed professionals. And so they've now decided to just get out of the business of doing this because they can't handle it anymore. Which is unfortunate because we have shortages in particular certain areas of safety dental services, and we'd like to have more people to screen, and so I really hesitate to support them in that. And more so, if you could describe a little more about what you plan to do, because I assume the clinical component is huge in your field as well, and you have people having to do so many hours of clinical before they're finally a formal professional. So there's one is looking how equivalent their degrees are or the classwork they did and all that, but how do you propose to evaluate them clinically as part of this process?
Ms. Repsicle.
Thank you. That's a very good question. We would evaluate them to the best of our ability as we do all applicants. We would look at their supervisor, how was that person trained? Did they have training and supervision? One thing I would offer too, in contrast to what we call the blood boards in our main building over there, medical practice nursing, you know, where there are more intrusive physical procedures. I mean, we don't have the same kinds of danger, although we do have potential harm to clients from incompetent practitioners. So I do appreciate that observation. And Dr. Reese.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I was on the Board of Psychology's Application Review Committee for about 3 years a few years back, and I think during that time we had a total of maybe two or three applicants coming from outside of the country. But the problem was we had no way to deal with them at all. So I don't think the numbers are going to be great.
Members,
taking into consideration what you're saying.
I understand the concerns, and I know about the dental, foreign trained dental as well. If this is intended for a non-controversial bill, and if there are issues in here that we need to work out, I'll be more than likely to take anything out by myself. So, with that, we have to vote Representative Abler's House File 2105 until the delete all.
As amended.
Representative Winstead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I apparently got crossed up here confused. Is it the entire bill? The entire?
No, just
right. So the amendment should be appropriate to that then, correct?
So we amended it to include, Mr. Chair, Representative Benstead, basically section 2 on lines 5.3 to 5.21 is taking out the sentence that
right,
is included in 1415.
So the motion should be just that portion of this bill, not right. Section 1.
That's why I said as amended.
Right, sorry. Did we take that first part out? I don't think that was an amendment yet.
Excuse me, as amended, we didn't amend this thing to delete all those other sections.
Right.
Hold on. Why don't Ms. Aves let us know what we've done?
We're going to be dealing with House File 2105, Mr. Chair. What we need to do is on page 1, delete section 1. On page 5. We're going to include lines 5.3 through 5.21, deleting on page, on line 5.14, everything after B period, all of line 5.15, and on line 5.16, deleting subdivision 1, clause 3, and on page 5, delete section 3.
Okay.
That's what I meant, Mr. Chair.
I think just to be safe, let's have this, can we say this motion prevails all the motions that we...
They'll figure it out, Mr. Chairman. I think they understand.
I move Ms. Aves' amendment, oral amendment. Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed. All right, Representative Abreu, you are giving us a very hard time.
I'm sorry. I knew my motion that it get passed and I can be done. You got a way out?
Okay, let's move this amendment into the bill. All those in favor of the 205 bill as amended into the DE one, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. I rest my Ava. We're done.
I'm leaving, Mr. Chair.
You're done for the rest of the year.
And Chair Dowd, just for the record, it is House File 2105 that we inserted as amended. Not 205. In case someone's listening.
Very good. Representative Walker, I hope I will move Representative Walker's bill 1724 for possible inclusion, and that means we won't be voting on it today. We will have more or less testimony from the proponent and opponent. We will give equal time, I guess. 15 minutes, good? Okay. The proponent, I don't want the books, but I'll take the cards home.
Mr. Chair, is that for a ride home? You live so close.
Go ahead, Representative Walker. You got 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm not sure if it's a good thing to follow Representative Abler ever. But I will do the best that I can. I'm going to be very brief and try to walk through this bill quickly so we can get to our testimony. Article 1 of 1724, Section 1 basically gets into the definition. This is a new article that would create a licensure for naturopathic doctors. The definitions include naturopathic doctor advisory council, the criteria for the programs, and things of that nature. Section 2 gets into the scope of practice that includes what is prohibited as practice and the parameters. Section 3 is the professional conduct, which includes informed consent. the licensee to maintain patient records for 7 years, which is very important. Then the practices and things of that nature. Section 4 gets into the licensure itself and talks about the naturopathic doctor has to display their license at the place of practice. It also lists the titles as initials associated with the practice. Section 5 gets into the requirements, which include, which is very important, the educational program, the proof of the applicant has successfully passed the naturopathic physician's licensing examination. It gets also into the fact that this license would have to be renewed annually. Section 6 moves into the board action and applications for the licensure. Section 7 is the continuing education that most of all of our health professionals have to maintain. Section 8 goes into the discipline of reporting and the grounds for action that would be taken on by the Board of Medical Practice. Section 9 talks about developing an advisory council for the naturopathic doctors. Section 10 gets into the fees, penalties for late renewals, and things of that nature, non-refundable fees. Article 2 basically is an overview. It's just putting naturopathic doctors into the language that we already have in existence for all the other areas of physicians, nurses, nurse practitioners, and things of that nature, whether it is the Good Samaritan law and things of that nature, making sure that it complies with all the other health professionals currently have.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leslie Walensky, and I am the president of the Minnesota Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and I am a graduate of a 4-year accredited naturopathic medical school, and we're here just to talk to you and tell you a little bit more about our naturopathic practice. Naturopathic doctors, I'm going to start by just saying why we're seeking licensure. Naturopathic doctors currently in the state of Minnesota cannot practice to the full extent of their training. We're trained with in conventional medical sciences as well as a wide range of natural therapies such as botanical medicine and nutrition. And so what we're looking for with this licensing bill is to practice within the scope of our training. And okay.
Madam Chair, testifiers are quite nervous and scared of you guys.
As you can see, so far this evening has been a rather I think you're doing fine. We're all at this point. It's been a very challenging week at the legislative this week. The hours have gotten longer, so all of us a little bit rattled. So I hope you'll pardon us as we go forward this evening. And we're all pulling together here, and we welcome you here, and please relax. We want to hear what you have to say.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Dan Campo, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Naturopathic Physicians. I figured I'd just maybe go over a few of the little things, like why I've hauled up a big red cart in front of you and a few of the other little things here, and then turn it back over to Leslie Walensky. One of the things, in just explanation in this cart, this is it isn't all the books. I couldn't fit them all in my grocery cart, but this is essentially the first and second year's required readings and testings for naturopathic physicians. These are actually Leslie Walensky's books. So we just thought in coming forward to a committee with something that members hadn't heard before, it's always nice to give you a little bit of a more in-depth idea of really what this group is all about and some of their background and educational requirements and things like that. So I merely wanted to bring up these books, and as you can see, there's everything from organic chemistry to anatomy, pathology, and pharmacology. And the other thing I wanted to just show that show all of you is basically this is the naturopathic clinical board study manual. These people are nationally board certified. There is currently licensure in 15 states. Naturopathic doctors work in all kinds of clinical applications. They work in, for example, in Chicago, there are oncology, hematology, radiology clinics that have naturopathic doctors on staff that work with the oncologists, all the way down to family practice, general practice physicians, chiropractors, and everything in between. We actually, there's a national program going on where naturopathic physicians are actually working in on reservations and doing that. I just kind of wanted to cover a few of the things that were on the cover here. They have pharmacology, obviously nutrition, counseling, physical medicine, homeopathy, minor surgery, and then this book has a sample exam, and it's completely over my head, and it's about 400 pages. So I'll turn it back over to Leslie Polinsky, and maybe she can give an idea of what's going on.
Thank you. One other point that I would like to bring up, too, is regarding the issue of public safety. So currently in the state of Minnesota, there are any one of us could practice or call ourselves a naturopath. And what we would like in this licensing bill is to identify those people who have this kind of this level of training, and allow for the public to be able to differentiate when they're choosing their healthcare providers with this level of education, and practitioners who may not have the same level. So it is, in our eyes, a public safety issue. There are cases of harm in states where there is no licensing law for naturopathic doctors, where unlicensed practitioners or practitioners who are not eligible for licensure have caused harm by doing therapies that are experimental and have caused serious harm and death in some cases. So we're seeing this happen in states across the country, in unlicensed states, and that's a big motivator for us. And we want, we're really probably the most highly trained doctors in natural medicine. And we all know that healthcare consumers are choosing alternative and complementary therapies. So we want to offer the very best of what those therapies have to offer by being able to practice to the full extent of our training. So I'm going to have Dr. Dia Osman.
Hi, my name is Dia Osman. I'm also a member of the association, a board member. I'm here to offer support and obviously talk more about naturopathic medicine, how it plays a role in safety is very big. We have the $47 million as of 2002 was spent on complementary alternative medicine. A lot of people are looking for complementary, many of its forms, but people are uninformed of what works and what doesn't work. A very typical scenario is a lot of patients self-prescribing nutritional and all various types of things because they're available in the unregulated industry. I work myself in with medical doctors as an adjunct to their clinic, and a big part of that is patient safety, and they are concerned, these medical doctors are concerned with how patients are self-prescribing, how nutrients and herbs can interact with some of the medications, and so having a naturopathic, trained naturopathic doctor, which is happening on all these licensed states where we have now naturopathic physicians on hospital staff for that same reason, to advocate more patient safety. So really what this is about is to differentiate the current bill, which is we're covered under the Complementary Alternative Medicine Act 146A, I believe, and take us above and to differentiate the level of training that we've pursued and worked very hard to attain, never mind the student loans and all the things that we've also had to receive to achieve our medical education. So this is really our bill is about.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
If I could, I'm not sure if members have questions for the testifiers and then get into the opposition, and then hopefully I can say a couple words before this possible amendment of how I got involved in all of this.
We will take testimony and
I prefer we don't do any amendments today.
I don't know. I haven't seen an amendment, but I heard there was amendments.
I don't think so. I haven't seen it. If it is, I don't think it made the deadline.
They didn't come down. That's okay with me.
So,
but if we can take that, I don't know if Mr. Chair, if members have questions for these.
Why don't we have the opposition up?
Okay.
And then when members have questions, we could bring whoever the question is directed towards to answer. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. I guess we are going with Nancy Holmes and Greg Schmidt, or if you are coming together as one group, it'll be fine. If not, come one at a time.
Different groups.
Okay. Ms. Holmes.
Yes.
State your name for the record and who you with, or if you're not with anyone, that's fine.
I'm just as nervous as they are. Representative, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Hall, and I'm a traditional naturopath, a homeopath, and a registered nurse, although I do not represent myself as a nurse. I am the co-founder of the Minnesota Natural Health Coalition and the Minnesota Natural Health Legal Reform Project, although I'm not representing either of those groups tonight. Tonight I come to you as a citizen and as a traditional naturopath. In 1998, the coalition came to the Minnesota legislature to create a legal environment in which the citizens of our state would have access to their natural health practitioners. I have handed out to you the history of that, because I only have 2 minutes. So on the back page there gives the medical statute that restricted natural health people from practicing and a history of how we came to pass the legislation. We had two parts of this legislation. The first part made it legal for licensed individuals to add natural therapies to their practice. This would include physicians, nurses, physician's assistants, psychologists, social workers, etc. The second half of the bill was to make it legal for citizens of Minnesota to access all of the unlicensed practitioners that would include such people as homeopaths, naturopaths, herbalists, and body workers, to mention a few. In the first of 15 hearings, the Health Committee and the Minnesota House of Representatives threw out Part 1, the part for licensed individuals. There were members of the committee that led a protest saying that it would not be right to have doctors use natural health. But they said not to worry, that soon they would revisit this issue separately. We tried to pin them down when this would be. That was in 1998. We went through 15 hearings, and in the spring of 2000, this bill, 146A, passed overwhelmingly in the Minnesota legislature. In fact, in the Senate, we had only one dissenting vote. In 146A allows the practitioners in this room to practice natural therapies legally. There is an acupuncture licensing law and a midwifery licensing law that they can comply with, given that they can pass the muster for these regulations, which they should be able to with their extensive educations. I'm here to oppose this legislation, House File Number 1724, for the following reasons. Before I tell you the reasons, I want to say that I have full respect for all the naturopaths here in the room, and I and the organizations that I've been a member of all want these individuals to practice, and they want them to practice at more of the skills that they have been trained to do. However, from my perspective, given that the long list of drugs in this bill is not on the natural therapies list, as a traditional naturopath, I would suggest that they are asking to be a holistic physician. Over half of this bill is in regards to allopathic medicine. There are over 60 drugs listed. Or they could be naturopaths with a specialty in allopathic medicine. They would be carving out their niche with the medical board. I would support that. We as citizens would like to go to a naturopath with a certification or a holistic medical doctor to get our blood drawn, oxygen, maybe a cup tended to, all the things that's listed in their bill. We would like them to be able to go to a birth and be able to have obstetric emergency medicines available. We would like them to be able to diagnose and have the tools to do that.
But it is anathema to naturopathy to give Schedule 3, 4, and old substances and the long list of drugs listed in this bill. The list of non-prescriptive drugs seems odd as well. One can go to any drugstore to get a non-prescriptive drug over the counter. And primarily, there is nothing natural or naturopathic about drugs. It is true that many citizens want to be able to go to a holistic medical doctor that is allowed by law to refer to an unlicensed natural health practitioner or a naturopath. But then the legislature would have to make this legal and force the Board of Medical Practice to allow medical doctors to do this, because at this time they are not allowed to do that. We would like to do that, and I would participate in helping that to happen. Let us be creative and carve out a place where all of us can practice to the full extent of our talents. I believe we can all do this if we can think outside the box. And finally, and most importantly, we should be working together to provide natural therapies and the best therapies to the citizens of Minnesota, and not working against one another. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holm. We have Mr. Schmidt. Then after that, we will go with Julie Steiber. Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Greg Schmidt. I'm president of Minnesota Natural Health Legal Reform Project. I am a consumer, which is a consumer-based organization. I am also a carpenter by trade and a natural health consumer by choice. The determining factor in our decision-making as a consumer organization is how do existing laws and pending legislation affect consumer choice. Our primary objective is the expansion of our health freedoms. The greater the access and exposure to all information, services, products, and practitioners, etc., the greater the options for maximizing one's own path of wellness, which is ultimately the responsibility of the individual. And as we know, there is no single method to get there. Since we believe so strongly in the collaborative process, and since our history with the organization which is proposing this legislation is one of seeming disinterest on their part, we can only conclude that the primary objective is of benefit to the members of the organization first and foremost, and that ultimately will lead to fewer options for consumers. Indeed, the report from the Council of Health Boards states, and I quote, "The legislative proposal, if enacted, would remove the licensed practitioners as well as those who cannot meet the established criteria from the jurisdiction of the Office of Complementary and Alternative Practice. Cases that would previously have been under the Office of Complementary and Alternative Practice will now be referred to the Medical Board. The traditional naturopaths do not want to be swept over into this allopathic venue just because this group wants to practice allopathy. We would like to see the expansion of practitioner freedom as well. One of the limiting side effects of licensure is that as certainly as it keeps other people off your turf, it also imprisons you on it. We know that there are skills that the proponents could bring to the table but cannot because of some other occupation scope of practice restrictions. Repeating a flawed approach benefits hardly anyone. For these reasons, we oppose this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Ms. Julie Steiber. State your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Julianne Sieber, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Dietetic Association. And we had several concerns. I thought I would start out, we are a licensed profession in Minnesota. Dietitians integrate and apply the scientific principles of food, nutrition, biochemistry, physiology, food management, and behavioral and social sciences to achieve and maintain health through the provision of nutritional care services. People in the profession have at least a bachelor's degree with an additional year-long internship, more than half have a master's degree. As with any scientific discipline, new methods and techniques and the discoveries that change the body of knowledge that one must master in order to be an expert is continually changing. It takes considerable time to keep up with this body of knowledge just in the one field of nutrition science. Allopathic medicine operates as a team with many experts on the team, just to name a few: physicians, nurses, pharmacists, physical therapists, and dietitians, each of whom is responsible to keep up to date in their own field of practice. We have a hard time imagining how a practitioner of naturopathy could keep up to date in all of those areas of practice, which is proposed in the scope of practice in the bill. Nutrition and diet therapy is just one part of that, along with a long laundry list of others. Dietetics practice is based on scientifically validated principles that are studied in a wide variety of universities and research organizations and published in a wide variety of scientific journals and reviewed by a variety of different health professions. Naturopathy includes many modalities of practice that have not been validated in this way and some that have been shown to provide no benefit. Another concern we have is that while several Minnesota colleges and universities provide training in most of the fields of practice, there is none in Minnesota nor even in the surrounding states, so there's no local control or regulation over the education of the practitioners. We also had a concern about the fact that the state of Minnesota would be telling the people of Minnesota by licensing practitioners in naturopathy that their practice is safe and effective. People have a great respect for the title doctor, and we felt that it should carry with it the qualifications, the highest level of qualifications to competently manage health for the residents of the state. And then just a couple of comments about the components of the bill itself. No person may currently engage in dietetics or nutrition practice unless the person is licensed as a dietitian or nutritionist by the Minnesota Board. Exceptions are made for those licensed to practice medicine, nursing, optometry, psychology, pharmacy, dentistry, chiropractic, when nutrition practice is incidental to the practice of the person's profession. There's no exception for naturopaths, yet throughout the bill, as proposed, the scope of practice includes the components of nutrition and dietetics practice. Additionally, in Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 2 of the bill, there's a statement that a naturopathic physician shall not practice or claim to practice as, and it's followed by a long list of 11 health professions, but neither dietitian nor nutritionist is listed in that list. And then one further area of concern, the legislation that was passed to license dietitians and nutritionists specifically prohibits them from selling nutritional preparations such as vitamins, minerals, amino acid supplements, all those kinds of things. Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 1 of this bill allows, as one of the services, dispensing for preventive and therapeutic purposes, which I presume means to sell them, because that's what pharmacists do, they dispense. And it's a long list: food, extracts of food, nutraceuticals, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and a bunch of other substances. If this is a conflict of interest for dietitians, we had the question, why is it not a conflict of interest for people in this profession? And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Siebert. We have Jerry Johnson and Diane Miller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Jerry Johnson. Diane Miller is ill tonight, unable to testify, but I am the president of the Minnesota Natural Health Coalition, and my comments would be about the fact that we want to make it sure, if this legislation goes forward, that the language will be clarified to make it crystal clear that there's a difference between a licensed naturopathic physician and a traditional naturopath, because they are really two very distinct groups of individuals. Their practices are very different from each other. The things they do, the way they approach their treatments are very different from each other. And we want to make it clear in the language. We would like to bring amendments to change, to clarify, to make it clear that the traditional naturopaths would be, continue to be able to practice under the jurisdiction of Statute 146A, and that they would not be at risk of prosecution for the practice of naturopathy without a license. Just to make it really clear who could use which titles and who could not use which titles, so that people don't get kind of hauled into a court of law and the language isn't clear. It has been a problem in a number of states that natural health practitioners or traditional naturopaths have been prosecuted for the practice of naturopathy without a license. And I understand that the proponents here in Minnesota would not have any desire for that to happen. But it could happen in the future, and so we want it to be clear from the get-go. We have submitted clarifying amendments to the proponents of the bill and the author, and it would be very important for us to, for those to be included. Just as an example, we would want to say that the use of the terms naturopath, naturopathy, traditional naturopath, naturopathic practitioner, or any other term entitled not prohibited by law shall not be restricted or regulated under this chapter. And we would want to make it clear that the provision of health care services by people who are practicing under 146A for complementing alternative health care practice would not be restricted under this bill.
Next.
We have submitted all of this in amendment form, and we hope that there will be an opportunity for these to be adopted by the committee before the bill goes forward.
Ms. Johnson, we have no intention of moving any amendments or the bill out tonight. We will have, if this does move forward, we will give ample opportunity for everyone to participate.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Boyd Landry. And next up is George. I can't pronounce that.
Jeff.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few things to hand out.
Go ahead, Mr. Landry, state your name and who you represent for the record.
Okay.
You may continue when you're ready.
All right. My name is Boyd Landry, and I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition for Natural Health in Washington, D.C. And there we go. Give me one here. I think that should do it. Okay. Sorry for being late, Mr. Chairman, but I'm glad I could get here, and this is my first opportunity to visit your fine capital, so I'm excited to be here.
Thank you.
Pardon me, I'm from deep, deep South Louisiana, so if my accent sort of throws you off, I tend to talk too fast, just raise your hand and I'll slow down. It's the nature of the beast anyway.
Well, fine.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony here today regarding House File number 1724. I'm the executive director of the Coalition for Natural Health, and have been in that position for 10 years and have probably amassed a tremendous amount of knowledge about this issue and dealing with it all across the country. In fact, I just left Denver, Colorado earlier today, where I was dealing with the same issue there. So I have a tremendous amount of knowledge about this issue, and glad for the opportunity to be here today. And if I repeat some of the things that were said earlier, I apologize, but I just got here. So I want to draw some attention to a couple of issues. Some are policy-based issues. For example, there's not any tremendous amount of consumer demand for this issue to be licensed, for naturopathic physicians to be licensed. Secondly, when you're only talking about 18 licensees, is that going to be enough to support a licensing program? I think that, you know, that's something we have to look at as you have to look at as legislators, And we have to look at it as citizens to make sure that the state doesn't have to fund this program, that it's able to fund itself. Third thing is, and this is something that you need to ask as members of the committee, of the proponents, certainly about some of the educational components that they talk about. For example, is there, and I went all the way through graduate school, and so, you know, those of you that have gone that far, even further, you always want to make sure when you're in that process that you have a what I call a wide diversity of professors that came from a wide of schools of thought, for example. You know, I think in my graduate program, we didn't have anybody from LSU, you know, in my graduate program. But you look at Bastyr, for example, 39 of the school's 46 faculty members list their degrees from Bastyr as their primary credential. So, you know, it's sort of like, and I'm trying to create a good way to say this, but they're teaching their own as opposed to bringing people outside to bring in new ideas and new schools of thought and that sort of thing. I mean, how hard is it to find somebody from Harvard or Princeton or Columbia to come teach anatomy or biochemistry or those kinds of things when you're having these same people who graduated from your school teaching these subjects? That's just from a policy perspective, that raises concern for me and raises red flags for me. As primary health care providers, traditional medical doctors begin their clinical work in their third or fourth year, and then they go through residency and internship. Well, they don't have that component, yet they want a scope of practice that gives them the ability to do that and to act as if they're primary care physicians and to be like medical doctors who are general practitioners, if you will, internists. So those are things that you have to sort of look at. And then there's really not a precedent. I mean, Minnesota has looked at this issue, I don't know, three or four times over the last 10 years that I can count. And there's never been really any change in the status quo, if you will, that warrants a change to bring this about. So, and then the other thing, and whether this has been brought up or not, is the Health Occupation Review Council of Health Boards just issued their report, and I don't know if members of the committee have seen the report, but I just want to pick up on a couple of the quotes that I picked up out of that report that I thought was pretty important. One is, overall, the committee returned several times to a question about the apparent overlap of the practice of naturopathic medicine with other occupations. That is, there are questions as to whether the practice of naturopathy is an occupation that is different, is a different and unique entity from other health professions, or which provides a unique service not otherwise available from currently licensed practitioners. In other words, is there anything in this bill that nobody else is doing? And if there is, then we probably should take a look at it. If not, then it's certainly being covered by other professions. Why are we wanting to create a new profession that's already being covered by other professions? Another thing is, the subcommittee did not receive sufficient information to determine the cost of regulation. The size of the group that would be regulated is estimated by the proponents and consists of only 25. I found only 18. I mean, I looked, I can only find 18 people. Based on experience as health occupation regulators, the council is dubious regarding cost effectiveness. Thirdly, if the scope of practice requested by the occupation is granted, it will be far expanded from current practice, prescribing and administering drugs, performing electrocardiograms, ultrasound, phlebotomy. How the board, meaning the Naturopathic Medical Oversight Board, would ensure this competency is unknown. Such matters might ultimately be determined by the civil liability system. So again, we've got a lot of different issues that that this bill brings about, and this group of people, the Council of Health Boards, took an exhaustive look. I think they met six or seven times, members of the medical profession and nursing, and I forget all. I have the list here in the report, but they issued a report that was, I don't know, 40 pages long about this particular issue. Had people from a wide variety of disciplines to provide it, and that's, like I said, six or seven times. And, you know, based on that, there are a lot of different issues and a lot of different reasons why this bill should not move forward. And I urge the committee, at the time in which you decide to move the bill, or to attempt to move the bill, that you certainly decide not to. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm open for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. We will go forward to George Schepholster. And then after that, we'll give the mic to Phil Griffin. And then from there, we'll allow Representative Walker some minutes. Go ahead, sir. Introduce yourself and who you represent for the record.
My name is George Schepholster. I'm a family physician from St. Cloud, and I represent the Minnesota Medical Association. And I appreciate it, Representative Tarwin Committee, allowing me to come and speak before you about this. I'm going to very briefly try to address three issues that we have raised in our organization about this, which have actually been stated before, so I'll try to be very brief about it, and again would be willing to answer any other questions that you might have. As a family physician, I'm very supportive of practitioners of complementary and alternative medicine being part of the healthcare team and recognize their role. And so this is, the issues of concern are not about that, but are specifically about this legislation. There are three areas, as I mentioned. One is around the actual purpose of licensure. It seems to me that it would be, the point of it would be to assure the competency of those people being licensed. And the question that has been raised already here is, does this bill distinguish those doctors of naturopathy from anyone else who is practices that? In fact, it specifically says that it does not. And so then it might be difficult to utilize the role of licensure to ensure competency in naturopathy when it doesn't really distinguish those that are being licensed. The second area of concern would be, it seems that providing licensure is one way to state endorsement of the safety and value of those practitioners being licensed. The bill does distinguish the doctor of naturopathy as different from other practitioners in the fact that they have more training. But it doesn't really, as I've already stated, be clear about any different skills that that more training actually offers. And so then the question would be, why would a bill be raised to do that, to specifically recognize those with more training? And the concern of our organization is that may mean that in the future they would be interested in seeking such things as third-party reimbursement. And if that would be the case, our concern would be that it may make it difficult to be consistent with what I would see as healthcare reform goals. A couple of them. One would be to be leading towards more evidence-based practice, and a second would be to try to be addressing costs. And so the question may be, well, how would this raise the costs? And that leads into our third area of concern, and that is the scope of practice as it's described in the bill. It's not clear that there's any distinction between, any significant distinction between the doctor of naturopathy, or actually anybody practicing naturopathy is listed there. Between doctors of naturopathy and primary care physicians such as myself, or generally I'm a family physician, or general internists, or pediatricians, or nurse practitioners, or physician's assistants, there doesn't seem to be any distinction. And so the question would be, would it, rather than help to address costs, actually raise costs by adding another group of practitioners to do such things as office procedures, which aren't clearly defined, prescribing medication, and ordering x-rays or other diagnostic imaging, which, as you may know, is a big area right now of concern amongst third-party payers, and how they would even address that already with us other primary care practitioners. So those are the issues that we are concerned. I think they're restatements of what's already been said, but I certainly would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you for coming. Mr. Griffin? State your name and what you do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Griffin. I represent Preferred One, and want to just provide a quick note on the health plan's perspective. And Representative Walker said when she saw me get up to testify last night, she said, oh, no, I promised not to talk as late as we went last night. For the committee members, the health plans don't have any particular perspective on the bill as it relates to licensing. But having worked in this area for a number of years, I've had the opportunity to see a number of licensing bills that have come forward, and then shortly after we've been presented with bills that mandate payment for those professions. And we just want to be on record as you move forward in considering this to remember that the impact of adding new providers to the healthcare system, while often touted as being more effective and lower cost, has been additive to the healthcare system, and we want to make sure that you are aware that as we move forward, this not be used as a vehicle to try and find income for a group of providers. Mr. Chairman, members, that would be just my brief comment. If there are questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Why don't, in fairness to Representative Walker and the proponent, we will give them 10 minutes? Is that good?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Then we will go with the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm hoping to even be quicker than that. Yep. I'm going to have...
Oh, Representative Walker, maybe before you start, why don't I do this? I remember we have not voted on the DE1 yet. Move it out to Representative Thiessen's committee. So, I'll give you time to think about what you're going to say while we vote on this. I moved the DE1 for passage, and we referred to the Committee on Health. I moved the DE1 for adoption, and then we referred to health and the key. Good. Move the DE1 for adoption on Senate File 26. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? No. Okay, adopted. Bill is adopted. I move to send Senate File 26 to Health Human Service Policy Committee as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Senate File 26 has been adopted as amended. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to let my testifier go before I give some closing remarks, if that's okay.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Helen Healy. I'm a naturopathic doctor in the state. I've been here since 1984. I too lived in Louisiana, if that counts for anything, for 3 years, and graduated from the high school there with honors. I guess I can start with anywhere, I suppose. I guess I'd have to say among my patients, and I think a lot of the other patients, there is consumer request for this. Oftentimes in our clinic, oftentimes people are asking, when are you ever going to get licensed? They do want to see us practice more to the full scope of our practice. In terms of teaching our own, yes, there is some of that, just as I'm sure at a lot of the medical schools. There are a lot of courses taught by other medical doctors and PhDs as well. I know that when I was a student, we had teachers that came from the Oregon Medical School and come down and teach us. So we were taught by medical doctors and PhDs, as well as the occasional naturopathic doctor and chiropractic doctor. The trouble with some of the residencies is that naturopaths don't have hospital privileges. It's difficult to have residencies when you don't have any hospital to practice in. So our residencies are basically what we can get at our own school clinics. I'd have to say we do the best we can with our limited resources. Some of the states, I suppose, to name one, Utah does require a residency before naturopathic doctors can practice. They have to do a 2-year residency. I agree that there is overlap. I think there's a lot of overlap with a lot of the professions that can be discussed all day. And let's see, actually, at this point, I might pass the microphone on to the next.
My name is Dia Osman, also a naturopathic physician, holds a license in the state of Arizona at this time. I'm here to add something. There's a few things that we need to recognize. The NIH in the last 5 years have added a significant amount of funding towards CAM, and one of the key professions that it has asking physicians to practice are naturopathic physicians. They're on these grant proposals, and so that's a big thing. The other thing is I'm finishing up my master's at the University of Minnesota at the School of Public Health, and a big part is public health. Getting into research grants and working in public health is a big aspect of getting licensure. As we know, there is a shortage of physicians across the country, across every county. That is a big deal in our country. Healthcare needs to change, as I've learned extensively from the University of Minnesota, which is one of the top 10 universities in public health. So the key thing here is there a science? Yes, there is a science. We do practice a lot of evidence-based in our practice. We do look at research. We do advocate research. A lot of the institutions that we do have, whether it's at Bastyr University, which is an accredited university by the United States Department of Education, regulated by the Council of Naturopathic Medical Education. So this is a federally recognized university, which is just like the University of Minnesota in terms of having instructors teach their own. A lot of medical school faculty are University of Minnesota graduates teaching students. So the example of Bastyr, that is very normal across the board. In terms of limiting practitioners that practice naturopathy or traditional naturopathy, this bill would not affect. We're not interested in that. We are trying to differentiate ourselves from the level of training that we have achieved and worked hard to get to. Very similar to a lot of the medical students, pharmacists have 4 years plus 4 years. We have 4 years and 4 years. That's something that I want to emphasize. The Dietitian Association mentioned 4 years plus 1 year. We do have bachelor's degrees and plus 4 years. And we have to write two-part licensing examinations. Second year after second year, we write very similar exams, just like any medical physician out there. The second component of our licensing examination is different in the sense that it emphasizes natural therapeutics. So that in one of those is pharmacology, where we have to understand the drugs that are being prescribed, because it's very relevant for helping patient safety. A lot of patients are very reluctant to come off medicated physicians, so it's a matter of communicating. And I do that every day in my practice at this time, talking with the physician, what is best for the patient, advocating patient safety again and again. It's really, and if you ask any patient that says why we should be licensed, it's like, I want better patient care. I want better patient care, where I can talk to my physician and talk to someone I can trust that is trained and at the same level and can communicate with me to help me get wellness and disease prevention, which is, I think, where we're going in this healthcare industry. And the revamping, which the Institute of Medicine said, the medicine needs to change. 2002 report said medicine needs a redesigning. And one of the things it says is we need physicians that are focused on prevention and wellness. And that's one of the things, the report that came up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Just a couple of things. There's some things that weren't brought up that I would leave on the table that individuals have testified in opposition. But there's one important one that I do need to bring up from our tourist. And hopefully he's spending quite a bit of money while he's here. Need all the money from outside folks that we can get. It's this lovely girl in the Seattle Weekly that we got. And as terrible as this was, we can't fool ourselves that practicing physicians that have the licensure have not also had some malpractice and loss of life. And so to have this out to make it seem like naturopathic licensed doctors are the only individuals that have caused casualty is an unfair thing to do. Second of all, Representative Ayler carried this bill last year. I carried it the year before. We weren't able to get hearings. I'm not quite sure. I know in the House of Representatives the last 7 years that I've been here, this has not been rejected. It just has not been able to be compromised and move forward. And so I do thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us the opportunity to hear this bill today. As you have heard, there is controversy to this. But guess what? As you have heard on Monday with physical therapists and chiropractors, this controversy controversy when you're dealing with scope of practice. And some may say the legislature have no business in this, but guess what? We're the ones that determine the statute on how individuals operate. And so on, sometimes as uncomfortable as we may get, this is where we have to go. And sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes us to learn a little bit more, to get a better understanding, but that's what has to happen. Change is inevitable. Some of the things that I've had in the past that have had difficulties, I can remember when chiropractors weren't respected, Representative Abler, where we didn't see them as a true form of medicine. And guess what we do now? And now we have the chiropractors fighting with the physical therapist, which is just, you know, the realistic aspects of it. I remember when the nurse practitioners weren't at the level that they were today, and the fight between that separation between RNs. The separation, my mother was an LPN, I remember the stories around the scope of practice between LPNs and RNs. This is just where society has brought us. Scope of practice is very difficult. I'm a huge supporter of natural medicine. As members know, I have asthma, I have severe allergies, I get on a steroid at least twice a year. And as someone who's 35, I think to myself often, where will I be in 65, 75 years of age? Will I be still taking the same medicines that I am taking today? And especially as it relates to a prednisone and the damage that I know a steroid does, no matter how limited time that you use it. I want to be able to utilize other forms of medicines, other forms of medicine where this country may not be up to par on yet, but other parts of this world are way advanced in not just utilizing the medicines that we consider traditional, but utilizing other medicines that they consider traditional. In closing, members, we're not talking about quacks. We're not talking about people that are weird. We may be talking about an area that may be uncomfortable, maybe an area that we may not be familiar with, but we're talking about a licensure for 26 individuals that are physicians, not just practicing natural medicines, and although we respect those that are practicing natural medicine, we're talking about physicians. And so while we may not be comfortable moving this forward, I challenge each one of you as the individuals that are on this committee and having to look at the scope of practice to learn more, not just about licensure, but in this particular area. These are doctors, and although the medical board, and I just real quick, and it's funny because, and I thank Ms. Johnson and her group, because their group was the only group to come to me. And this bill has been out here several years. This bill has been introduced for several weeks. Who have come to me to share with me personally what their concerns might have been. This group has actually been working. This is not the bill that was introduced last year. This is not the bill that was introduced a couple years ago. This board, this group has been working very hard with the medical board, with other individuals that practice natural medicine to move forward. And the bill that you have today has incorporated some of the changes through some of the hearings that were done last year. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate your consideration tonight.
Are there any questions from the committee on any of the testifiers?
Thank you, Chairman Cobb. I just wanted to, there's many, many questions I have in mind, I can sort them all through, but to begin with, I have in front of me a sheet that was handed out earlier this week, and it talks about the education that you choose. My understanding is an undergraduate degree followed by 4, sometimes 5 years, with possibly residency, all that resonated is associated with the same university, hospitals, and clinics, it sounds like, in both cases where you obtain a degree. And then you receive a doctor of nurse practice after this process. Could you explain to me, either people who are seeing it currently or others in the room, the difference between the distinction between traditional naturopaths versus a doctor of naturopathy who's gone through one of these university trains? Seems to have been brought up several times tonight, and I'd like to hear the difference between them and explain.
Thank you. Helen Healy again. I guess it actually needs to go back. Historically, naturopathy started in 1896, and naturopaths at the time. Back then, it was 2 years in residence school, then after another decade or so, it became 3 years, eventually 4 years. So the actual real tradition of naturopathic medicine were students that went to school to learn all the hands-on manipulation and the in-classroom activity. Meanwhile, there were some mail order degrees given out, and it was probably not until about 1993 or 94 did even the term traditional naturopath even come along. If that makes any sense, it was just a term that was invented actually in a courtroom when there was some other activity, which is probably not appropriate to go into in this discussion. So actually, there is no set standard if someone calls themselves a traditional naturopath. It could be anything. It could be an apprenticeship. It could be a weekend course. It could be an add-on. It could be somebody sending off sending in somebody to a correspondence school and then getting back basically a notebook with some notes in it with a promise that if the person studies it, that their material will be tested and they'll get back their grade and a certificate. No oversight, no overhead from those schools, and certainly no accreditation the way that our naturopathic schools are, where we have oversight from the Department of Education. Okay, yes.
Can I just add here, this is just a handout which I'm willing to make copies for, which compares our level of education compared to Clinton College, which is a school that gives a six-month almost degree and gives that title, but compared to the University of Minnesota and also Stanford Medical School, our education from the basic sciences in anatomy, cell biology, physiology, histology, etc., range between 900 hours to 935 at Southwest College. Clinton College offers its graduate 17 hours. The University of Minnesota offers 1,094 hours. In the basic sciences, in the clinical sciences, again, in the basic sciences, they range from 600 to 618. Clinton College offers 0 hours in clinical sciences. The University of Minnesota offers 481 to 544 hours in the clinical sciences. They're obviously different in allopathic therapeutics. We're trained range from 2,100 hours to in the naturopathic schools, compared to around 1983 to 3,040 at the University of Minnesota. So just again to see the difference versus Clayton offers their graduate around 8 hours in those trainings. So give you an idea of the level of difference in training in those different modalities. And there's others, but we're open to giving you a copy of this.
Sure.
This
is the represent by.
Yeah. Then to follow up further, a little bit of information Mike about these issues, but not a great deal, and I'm sure that may be true of other members of the committee. Then in the other comparison, you just did it in terms of coursework, but the difference between both the training, the residency, and then what your capabilities are in terms of exposure to traditional pharmacology that's in medical school versus others. So if you could comment what you perceive your differences between yourselves and medical school training. And then I'd like to hear the person from the MMA comment and also what those differences are.
The schools have pharmacology is one of the core things that were tested on as part of our licensing examination. So we are taught to make sure that we know the differences between the different classes of medications and drugs. In terms of usage-wise, you need to have a little more advanced training to be able to get, for instance, in the state of Arizona, to get a DEA number. You have to prove competency in pharmacotherapeutics by going through certain contact hours in addition to the training. But again, a part of our core training in every single school is to acknowledge all the different classes of drugs, and specifically our specific training is in the interactions between medications and natural treatments, whether it be herbal. In terms of application wise, obviously that depends on the jurisdiction. Most naturopathic physicians here, in fact here, that is not part of our scope at this time. But however, in states like Arizona and states like the state of Washington and California and Oregon, where that scope has been part of their scope for quite a long time, physicians there do use a lot of the different class of drugs in the primary care setting.
So in terms of that, that's as much as I could speak to it, again, because I at this time do not utilize or prescribe my medications and have to work with colleagues in the allopathic professions.
Looks like Mr. Holster. Chip Holster.
I can't speak to specifically a comparison. Our training would be an undergrad, usually a degree, 4 years of medical school, and then a residency for us is usually 3 years. So that would be the amount of training that would have that. Just to remind you, though, our concern isn't with a comparison between the two, because I really do think that all forms of complementary and alternative medicine have something to offer in the team. The real issue is, does this specific bill help us to assure competency in this group? Because they don't distinguish, as I can see it, between those that have a doctorate and those that don't.
Mr. Shep-Hoister.
Just don't look at it, yeah.
Currently, what you mentioned the team. And I assume you and work with other practitioners, and many of them, or some of them, would be naturopath.
Could be. Yeah, I happen to work with a couple of physicians in my area who I think would think of themselves as naturopaths. They are not doctors. They don't have the training that was talked about here, but they certainly offer that part to help me in dealing with the patients who are dealing with a lot of stuff that I don't, that are utilizing a lot of forms of therapy that I'm not familiar with. And so then they become, in my practice, an important part of that team. But again, the issue again for me about this bill is trying to license somebody that isn't really distinguished in any way.
I'm trying to figure out, how does that team work? I mean,
please start the team, Mr. Chair.
Why don't Mr. Hoyt?
It isn't a formal team at this point. Medical Home, for those of you who have an interest, I could talk about that forever, would be an opportunity for us to more formalize that team. Now it's just an informal team, but I just work with people. And they become part of what I utilize to help with my patients in dealing with their issues. And people who practice naturopathy would be part of that.
Mr. Osmond has...
The other thing, just to note, it depends on your clinic and your provider and how that team would operate.
I'll briefly describe the team that I work part of, but also Mr. Tate can also add, because he works at Woodwinds Health Campus in Woodbury, where there's also a team there, and he can describe how a team of that works. In the environment I work in, there's mostly primary care physicians that are in that environment. I come in when there's patients that are particularly not interested in pursuing, for instance, a very common cholesterol drug, Lipitor. Cholesterol metabolic syndrome is a huge part of our society today, so a lot of patients are reluctant to go on drugs. That's where I get the recommendation from the physician to come and work with me, working with diet, lifestyle, and using key things, because most patients are not just elevated cholesterol. We're talking people that are diabetic, that also have other comorbidities, other ailments at the same time. So it's a matter of understanding how we can use natural treatments, whether it be in terms of herbal therapeutics, nutritional treatments that can support the patient and at the same time minimize potential interactions and reduce the need for further medication, which is what the patient says, I do not want further medication. So just today, a physician referred a patient that is an anxiety disorder that is very reluctant to be on a lot of the psychotropic medications. How can working with the physician, talking about this case, what laboratory work is necessary? How can we move this patient from this position of disease to this position of health the fastest way possible? Again, through the safest way possible.
So, Mr. Osmond, most of your clients come from referral from a physician?
Not most of my clients. I get a lot of clients that way, but as well, I get clients that seek out
trained just as much as all my colleagues do, have practices that patients are looking for people that are trained. Just again, yesterday I had someone come in and say, I've been waiting for 4 years looking for someone that is trained. And this is someone who has gone to and visited many various people that claim to be naturopaths, but people that do not understand lab work, do not have the clinical diagnostic skills to do the things that we are trained to do. So working with that in adjunct to their primary care provider. And that's what I find the state of Minnesota residents and beyond around the country are looking for, people that can work alongside their medical doctor and can relay information in an intelligent and medical sense of the word, and therefore provide better care. But I'll let my colleague, Mr. Parker, talk about his experience before I add to that.
Make it brief. State your name for the record.
My name is Paul Rittay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the opportunity. I'm employed by Northwestern Health Sciences University. I work out at the Natural Care Center in the Woodwinds Health Campus, which I'm in an integrative clinic where I directly work with chiropractic physicians, a licensed acupuncturist, healing touch practitioner, massage therapy. And part of the model is for integrative care. Woodwinds Hospital was designed 5 years ago by Health East to really address the issue of complementary medicine, how to incorporate that into a hospital setting. So we're working very closely in communication about how to make referrals, how to include these different aspects of naturopathic medicine into some of the things that they do. They've looked at many different alternatives of offering acupuncture and also trying to incorporate naturopathic medicine as well. I would say that where I feel the value of naturopathic medicine is good clinical medicine is really the combination of three things. It's research evidence, which we need to pay attention to. It's also expertise of the clinician, and then finally patient preference. There's a high preference in this country right now for complementary care. There's patients out there that use many different supplements that they just buy over the counter, and they go into their medical doctor. They may not even express to their medical doctor, who may not even know that much about that. And the idea is, do we have training? Are there practitioners there that are trained on the same level to understand physiology and pathology and pathophysiology and have some understanding of these of the use of herbs and natural medicine in the modes of actually with healing?
Thank you. Representative Bunn, I saw you.
Well, first I was going to thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to follow up with some of the physician first in terms of something you said. When you spoke of your people that you worked with, I wasn't quite sure who you were saying. It sounded like it was other physicians who also dabbled in naturopathic practices because they had an interest in herbs, other kinds of things. Okay. I want to be clear about that. Because I think there are a number of those kind of physicians around, or huge number of folks who have done that in the last many years. Then to the other gentleman, in the cases, I think Mr. Kaplan, that you mentioned, the Lipitor example, it sounded like primarily dietary intervention type of therapies that you were talking about, possibly was herbal too. Is that correct?
Well, there's a lot of evidence based in regards to some herbal and nutritional treatments that have been shown efficacy in terms of treating elevated cholesterol, elevated triglycerides. So the issue here is to not only look at just that issue, but look at the whole person and to see which one actually can fit this person. So a lot of the physicians I work with do not have the training and recognize I do not have the training, and therefore this person does have the training, and therefore how do I best can give patient care? And that's across the board. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and just to motivate my question, that kind of thing, and also I heard a little bit, I've been to Woodwinds, lived near Woodwinds, think Woodwinds is an amazing model for the future of practicing integrated medicine, including alternatives, it's fabulous. But then your examples, when you talk about supplements, other kinds of acupuncture, massage, those are kind of traditional, there are some avenues, those are already kind of delineated professions or paths. And the issue that was raised earlier that you all are kind of in the bill, putting a whole bunch of dietary, acupuncture, homeotherapy, a whole number of areas, herbalism, botanicalism, which the comment was made by one of the presenters, that in any one of these areas, to keep abreast of the literature, the scientific research, it could be quite a challenge in many of these areas. And that you're having to carry quite a heavy load, I think, in taking all of that on. I'm not saying you don't necessarily do it, but asking about what you actually do in practice, and from the early examples you raised, one of the things you do in practice it was an example that, you know, the representative from the Dietetic Association might say, well, that's what dietitians are licensed to do, those kinds of things, to meet with a patient who's got issues with cholesterol and work with them to bring it down through diet and exercise and those kinds of things. So I'm just trying to get to that question, and I haven't drawn any conclusions yet, though, but for all of us in the room to kind of figure out exactly where this fits into the scheme of things. And so I appreciate your comments in response to what I said.
I think Representative Walker gets the last word, and I did promise Ms. Aves that we're going to get out here at 8:30, so it's 8:40.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will be brief. I wanted to thank Representative Bunn for her questions and comments. I just real quickly, you know, I just thought about what you said as it relates to a lot to take on as it relates to keeping up with knowledge. I compare it to my family doctor. For myself, I don't go to an OBGYN. I prefer a family practitioner because I want him to know a little bit about everything before I have to go to a specialist. That's my preference, and I am confident that he keeps up with knowing a little bit about everything and knowing where to go or send me when things get challenging. I have many of constituents, and actually I lost this fabulous doctor. He was in my district and changing the lives of many of my constituents who have either difficulty taking certain medications because, for example, for myself, I have an allergic reaction to several pain medications and don't know what will happen to me if I get in trouble. Don't want to keep experimenting with pain medications. But realizing that individuals, not just through nutrition, sometimes the mental capacity, not just with anxiety, but individuals that are in their last stages of terminal illness or cancer, things of that nature, and how to deal with that pain and suffering, a holistic approach is, you know, although the examples that we're given really focused on nutrition, for me it's a lot more than that. The opportunities that I've had to visit, the opportunities that I've had to sit down with my constituents and talk about the treatments that they've had, it's really about options. And closing, Mr. Chair, again, I can't stress enough, it's an option to license 26 individuals that have shown a capacity, have been educated and trained, and it's just one of those things that having difficulty and getting past that change in scope of practice.
All right. With that, I want to let the members know that I know we've been having a lot of evening meetings, and I appreciate the members for being here. We will probably have one more to get Representative Abrams' big bill done before we... Most likely, I assume we're probably going to do the PT again before the first deadline. So just keep that in mind. With that, thank you to all the guests for coming, and meeting adjourned.